I'll invite Vulelo Angiwana. Vulelo is the director of the Open Society Foundation in South Africa. The Open Society Foundation recently made an announcement that it is allocating some funding to COVID-19. So Vulelo, what has been the response of Open Society South Africa? What have you learned? What are the implications for collaborations within your network and beyond?
Thank you very much, Bekinkosi. And I think my previous colleagues before me have made really quite important points, especially around the opportunities that this pandemic is offering us in terms of being able to be collaborative, creative, and be innovative as Africans in finding solutions that best suits us as a continent. Okay, so let me just start with a few remarks, and then I'll come to your questions. I've been in the non-profit sector most of my career, and despite that, I've been always sitting on the other side of the table, opposite philanthropists, looking for funding, in fact, and understanding how sometimes it might seem quite difficult to break through in terms of being able to ensure or maybe make sure that the message that the civil society is as important in its entirety to a society, especially a society like South Africa, which is still so unequal. And therefore that funding needs to be able to ensure the survival of this society, of the sector, as well as go to areas where sometimes are not as well funded as others. Bongi mentioned, for example, that most of the CSI budget in South Africa goes towards education. There are other sectors. I mean, this virus now shows us very clearly that the health sector and being prepared for a pandemic like this is also very important. So in spite of the fact that the COVID-19 struck literally 2 months into my current position, and despite its ravishing effect on the people, as well as society at large globally, it has not dampened my idealistic enthusiasm about what philanthropy can achieve, especially in a country like South Africa with our record rate of inequality and attendant socioeconomic problems. And this is especially true, and Bongi did allude to this in her opening remarks, when grantees are regarded as collaborative partners in finding or co-creating solutions rather than just having a financial relationship with the foundation. COVID-19 has exposed the fundamental limitations of many sectors. That includes philanthropy as well in a very stark and very real world way. As an executive director of a philanthropic organization, I've been severely concerned about the impact of this virus on the civil society as a sector, and the ability for civil society to be able to be resilient through this this pandemic and be able to recover beyond this pandemic, because it is the one sector that is fragile at most. And needs the most support. So as OSFSA, for example, we've been really very, very focused on trying to realign our internal processes to ensure that we can get the money out the door to those that need it the most as soon as possible. This pandemic also affects the most vulnerable, who usually have underlying pre-existing conditions that make it very hard for them to fight the infection. South Africa, as everyone knows, has some of the highest rates of HIV and TB and non-communicable disease in the world. I'm still haunted by a video that I saw on WhatsApp of about 50 odd nurses in Amtata working for an Amtata General Hospital, standing in a circle outside the hospital gates, being told the results of their COVID tests, and all of those COVID tests have come back positive. And the cries and the absolute shatter of any hope for survival, you could see it in their faces, hear it in their voices. And one of them at the end of that video says, and they still want us to continue to work. And so that kind of, for me, sums up that the most vulnerable are actually the most needed. One of the things that this virus has done is to show how interconnected we are as a society, and that each of us, it doesn't matter which side of society you are in, we need each other to be able to survive in terms of as a human race. My concern was also based on the fact that philanthropy would not be the only necessary tool to assist with controlling and managing this pandemic. Humanitarianism was also called for. While the two terms are usually used interchangeably, they are actually quite notable in their differences. Philanthropy focuses often on financial relationship that could, in order to be able to benefit others, whereas humanitarians are always focused on making sure that they are in the right place, at the right place, in the right time, without any delays. In philanthropy, we are governed by a sense of what is right. And therefore, if we are investing this money, the institution needs to show us that investment is worthwhile through its historic management of resources, annual financial statements that have been audited, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas on the other hand, when money is needed, you cannot expect an institution to go through all of that. Money is needed right now. People are dying at this point in time. Today, the number of COVID positive cases in South Africa, they stand at about over 27,000. And over 15,000 of those are in the Western Cape alone. Within the Western Cape, when you look at the stats per suburb, you'll find that the highest number of deaths is in fact unallocated deaths, which means probably are people who have no addresses. And therefore, my assumption is that, though I understand under correction here, but my assumption is that those are the homeless people who are most vulnerable and are unable to fight this virus and are unable to wash their hands. They are unable to get access to protective clothing. They are unable to get access to masks, etc. And also, of course, that could also include other people such as migrants or immigrants that are undocumented. There's been a realization in the OSF networks and other foundations, and quite frankly, one of the best things that has come out of this pandemic is the collaboration that is already happening within foundations that are philanthropic foundations themselves. We're talking to each other more often, almost on a weekly basis. We're ensuring that we're leveraging resources so that we are able to support as best as we can. And also, we also realized as OSF SA that government can't do this alone, and that government needs to be regarded as a partner. And also, if government is a partner, it means that the civil society, as well as our grantees, need to be at the table when decisions and policies are being made that affect the community at large. And it's for this reason that, for example, we are not only supporting the Solidarity Fund, which we will support because they are doing some good work, but we are also aware of their limitations. And therefore, we are looking at other collaborations that have come through. For example, there is the People's Coalition, with all supported by various NGOs that are members to that. It doesn't mean that it comes without its own challenges as well. So we are continuously looking for innovative ways of ensuring that we are collaborating with other foundations within the network, OSF network, as well as in the South African space at large, plus with also our grantees. But the other thing that we've been able to do is to ask our grantees to pivot and be able to repurpose their grants towards COVID-related activities, especially in cases where they are unable to spend the money because of the lockdown situation that they find themselves in. That being said, we will continue to hold government to account because the stark nature of the structural inequalities that are still part of the South African society, that can't be allowed to continue. This virus has allowed us to be able to press pause, risk and reset, and rethink how we're doing things, why we're doing them, and what is the best way of achieving the best result and the most effective result in a timeliest way. I'm just going to end here, Becky, and say that we are looking at making in the next 3 months to make sure that we get the money up the next couple of weeks, to ensure that we push as much money out the door as possible as OSF SA, that we talk to our grantees, we convene them for conversations, that we find solutions that are in fact appropriate in this time of the pandemic, but also looking very, very closely in terms of what is needed in terms of policy, in terms of influence, advocacy, etc., for the post-recovery period. What is needed in terms of managing the pandemic, especially when a vaccine has been tested and is available. You will see that we've been part of a global contribution or collaboration towards what we call a people's vaccine. That says it doesn't matter which part of the world finds a vaccine first, that vaccine needs to be available to people globally, especially the people of Africa who are suffering the most. We are aware that the most economies that are going to be affected deeply, deeply by this virus is in fact African economies, and that their recovery will take much longer than the others. It's never going to be a V-shaped kind of graph where the economy goes down fast and then recovers very quickly. It's going to be a very slow return back to normal, just to be able to reclaim the position that we're in, literally in February of this year, where we were teetering on the stage in South Africa, teetering on the edge of being declared a junk status, but through COVID, we fell faster into that status. Climbing up back up is not gonna be that easy. I'm mindful also of the fact that really, I think one of the speakers in the panel, in the previous panel, did say this, to say that the heart of Africa really lies quite resiliently and quite strongly with the secondary, with so-called secondary economy, the informal traders, the markets that will come back as soon as it's safe to do so, that make food available very cheaply to those that need it the most and accessible to those that need it the most. I'll pass back to you, Becky.
The last question for now is, instead of taking funds out of foundations and trusts during the COVID period, how does philanthropy actually think or build up NGOs and MPOs to run better post-COVID?
First, I'm going to start with a quote that comes from Martin Luther King that says, philanthropy is commendable, but must not cause the philanthropists to seek to overlook the circumstances of injustice, which makes philanthropy necessary in the first place. And therefore, philanthropy is not a panacea for everything. It requires that it works collectively with various parts of society in order to be able to be effective in reducing the impact of poverty or reducing poverty, as well as being able to create a just society. And so we're never looking at ourselves as a foundation, as the only entity that can solve problems. We can only do those quite collaboratively. We also are not being very hard on ourselves. We try things and we actually are not afraid of failing in trying those things. But the point is, when we do fail, we need to bounce back very fast and be able to draw lessons from that failure and be able to put a more effective plan in action in order for us to really move forward. In terms of food security is important. And food security really requires a collaborative effort. Food security requires a thriving agricultural sector. It requires that we solve the land issue. It requires that we invest in new upcoming farmers. It requires that we invest in subsistence farming. It requires that everyone in the rural areas of South Africa must have security of tenure in order for them to be able to use their land and leverage their land as an economic base for their households. So I'm not quite sure if I've answered everything, but that's where we are at the moment. We do have a COVID-related strategy, and we've had to say we can't do things as we were doing in the past. This calls for business unusual, and therefore, what is our COVID strategy as an institution? And that COVID strategy is very clear. It's in terms of three tiers. One, by providing emergency funding for grantees and other partners that need it the most, from basic things such as we need to be able to talk to our people, and also being able to support through our grantees in media the dissemination information about the pandemic and how people can ensure that they remain safe through collaboration. The other tier, of course, is collaborating with other foundations in South Africa and being able to say that together our bucks really make an effective dent in this and other parts of the sector. Primarily, we are preoccupied as OSFSA, but with ensuring that the civil society survives and that it comes through as a resilient sector through this pandemic, but also that the civic society also is able to reflect on its own actions and be able to say what is currently working for us and what have we learned through this pandemic that we can in fact affect how creatively and innovatively we're able to be able to do our work going forward. Over to you, Becky.
We haven't spoken a lot about technology, the fourth industrial revolution, and how it's likely to either, assist in pivoting to the new normal or pose a threat in many ways. And so I'm thinking here about the ways in which we are going to design our institutions, the platforms that we're going to put in place in order to do our work, but also some of the processes and system around AI and among others that we can use for resource mobilization. Could you take just a few minutes to reflect on the role that technology might play in assisting us to move into the new normal?
Thank you very much. I mean, in terms of technology, technology obviously has a role to play in this. But we are, as an organization, we are kind of wary of the over reliance on technology during this period, especially, and what it means for civil liberties, like the ability of governments to monitor citizens, etc. So we kind of want to make sure that technology does not in any way expose vulnerable populations to even more vulnerability through data mining and things like that. The pandemic has also highlighted the need to support African technology and our own ability to be creative and innovative as Africans to find African solutions to African problems. Those you can see, there are many examples of that. I think Carl has mentioned quite a few of them already. There is, in Africa, generally speaking, and in South Africa specifically, still a very big digital divide. So low tech is also as needed as high tech at this point, in order to ensure that rural communities are able to get support, are able to communicate, are able to find information, get information on time, and be able to get access to health and other services. And so we kind of look at that on both sides of that equation to ensure who we support and how we support them. And in terms of my last remark, I would say, regardless of what this pandemic is currently affecting us as a country, and also my own anxiety about what still lies ahead, because at this point in time, we've just kicked the can down the road. We haven't actually managed to really, be able to say that we've curtailed the pandemic as much as we need to. I'm particularly worried about my own province, the Western Cape, and its current status at the moment in terms of the curve. I'm very worried about what will happen next when we are in fact having more freedom by going to the next level, and what will that mean in terms of the infections, etc., that we might see coming. So we are preparing ourselves as an institution to be able to come in and support as much as possible when there's a need. We are in this case led by science. Where there is an outburst of infections, we want to be there to support our grantees as well as onboard new grantees that we haven't had before that are able to do work in terms of making sure that we're flattening the curve. Wanting to ensure that those that need to go back to work and those that need to go back to school are able to do so very safely by making sure that as we get as much of our money out the door into the grantees that support those sectors as much as possible and as fast as possible. Thanks very much for inviting me to be part of this conversation.